Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 16, Lord Parasurama destroys the ruling class, text number 24. Swadeham Janma Dagnistu Labdva Samgyana Lakshanam Rishinam Mandake Sobhut Saptamo Rama Pujitaha Swadeham, his own body. Janmadagni, the great sage Janmadagni, to but Ladva regaining Samgyana Lakshanam, showing full symptoms of life, knowledge, and remembrance. Rishinam, of the great rishis. Mandale, in the group of seven stars. Saha, he, Janmadagni. Abhut, later became Saptama, the strength. Oh, the seventh, I'm sorry. Seventh. Rama Pujitaha, because of being worshipped by Lord Parasuram. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thus, Janmadagni, being worshipped by Lord Parasurama, was brought back to life with full remembrance, and he became one of the seven sages in the group of seven stars. Purport. The seven stars revolving around the pole star at the zenith are called Saptarishi Mandala. On these seven stars, which form the topmost part of our planetary system, reside seven sages: Kashyapa, Atri, Vashista, Vishwamrita, Gotama, Janmadagni, and Bharadvaja. These seven stars are seen every night, and they each make a complete orbit around the pole star within 24 hours. Along with these seven stars, all the other stars also orbit from east to west. The upper portion of the universe is called the north, and the lower portion is called the south. Even in our ordinary dealings, while studying a map, we regard the upper portion of the map as north. So if you're going north, you're going towards Brahma. But it may take a little while to get there. Where are we exactly? In this universe, where is this planet? What's that? I know, but where are all the where is all the universe that we think is the universe? Where is that situated in? What's that? Bhumandal is the flat plain, which includes Jambudweep, which we're part of. Jambudweep. We're on Jambudweep. A little part called Bharadvarsha. And we're in a little part of Bharadvarsha, what we think is this earth planet. But where is Bharadvarsha and Jambudweep and Bhumandala and all these different stars? Where are they all situated? In what? We're situated in the lotus flower that Lord Brahma was born on top of. We're situated inside the lotus flower. Anyhow, it doesn't make any difference to us. Here or there. If someone asks you, where do you live? You could say, I live in a lotus flower. And you'll be telling the truth. What part of it? Just right in the middle of it. My whole family lives here too with me. Text 25. My dear King Parikshit, the next manvatara, the lotus-eyed personality of Godhead, Lord Parasurama, the son of Janmadagni, will be a great propounder of Vedic knowledge. In other words, he'll be one of the seven sages. So it appears that Parasurama will also become one of the seven sages. Lord Parasurama still lives as an intelligent Brahmana in the mountainous country known as Mahendra. Do you know where Mahendra is? Yeah, it's near there. Completely satisfied, having given up all the weapons of a kshatriya, he is always worshipped, adored, and offered prayers for his exalted character and activities by such celestial beings as the Siddhas, Charanas, and Gandharvas. This way, the Supreme Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord and the Supreme Controller, descended as an incarnation in the Bhrigu dynasty and released the universe from the burden of undesirable kings by killing them many times. Vishvamrita, the son of Maharaj Gandhi, or Gaudi, was as powerful as the flames of fire. From the position of a kshatriya, he achieved the position of a powerful brahmana by undergoing penance and austerities. Purport. Now, having narrated the history of Parasurama, Shukadeva Goswami begins the history of Vishvamrita. From the history of Parasurama, we can understand that although Parasurama belonged to the Brahminical group, he circumstantially had to work as a kshatriya. Long after finishing his work as a kshatriya, he again became a brahmana and returned to Mahendra Parvata. Similarly, we can see that although Vishvamrita was born in a kshatriya family, he, by austerities and penances, he achieved the position of a brahmana. These histories confirm the statement in Shastra that a brahmana may become a kshatriya. A kshatriya may become a brahmana or a vaishya. And a vaishya may become a brahmana by achieving the required qualities. One's status does not depend upon birth, as confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam 7.11.35 by Narada. Yasya yad lakshanam proktam pumsam varna biv yang jakam yad anyatrapa drishyate drishita tat tenaiva vinirdishet. If one shows the symptoms of being a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, or a shudra, even if he has appeared in a different class, he should be considered according to the symptoms of classification. To know who is a brahmana and who is a kshatriya, one must consider a man's quality and work. If all the unqualified shudras become so-called brahmanas and kshatriyas, social order will be impossible to maintain. Thus there will be discrepancies. Human society will turn into a society of animals, and the situation all over the world will be hellish. There are only a few verses that are repeated more than once in Bhagavad Gita, because after all, Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all the Vedic literature, and it summarizes at least a billion verses and 700 verses. Therefore, Krishna was very careful not to repeat verses. Except this is one of the verses that Krishna repeated. Bhagavad Gita 3, chapter 3, Karma Yoga, text number 35. Shreyan Swadamo Viguna paradharma svanustitat swadharmi nididam shreyak paradharmo bhayavaha. It is better to discharge one's prescribed duty, even though faulty, than another's duties perfectly. Destruction, the cause of performing one's own duty, is better than engaging in others' duties, but to follow another's path is dangerous. So Srila Prabhupada's purport, one should therefore discharge his prescribed duties in full Krishna consciousness, rather than the prescribed duties for others. Materially, so that's the first point. We should find out what our duty is and then do it. That's our personal duty, but we should do it in Krishna consciousness. We don't have to worry about what everyone else is doing. Of course, if they're doing things that are rather strange, we might have to look out for ourselves. But in general speaking, we're not responsible for what everyone else is doing. We're responsible for what we're doing. But it's our obligation to find out what we're supposed to be doing and then do that in Krishna consciousness. That's what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanusmara yujita mayarpita manobudir mamevaishatyasam shayaha. Therefore Arjuna should carry on prescribed duty of fighting with the mind and intelligence fixed on me and everything engaged in me, he was sure to attain to me without doubt. So again, Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara yudhyacha mayarpita manobudhir mam evaishatya samshayaha. I think that should be there. Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna. At the same time, carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me and your mind intelligence fixed on me, you'll attain to me without doubt. So the perfection of our duty and the perfection of knowledge is to do whatever Krishna wants us to do and do it remembering Krishna. We have a body and we have mind intelligence. So the body is supposed to do what Krishna wants us to do, and mind and intelligence are meant to help us remember Krishna. Then the result is we'll become Krishna conscious. Quite simple. Any questions? So, this is Krishna says, therefore discharge his prescribed duties in full Krishna consciousness rather than prescribed duty for others. Now the question is, what is our prescribed duties? Anyone here a Kshatriya? Are you a Kshatriya? Seva? Nitya Seva? No. Most of us wouldn't. If we saw a drop of blood, we'd feel some difficulty. If we step on a thumbtack, we're calling 911 to come in with the ambulance to take us. What is to speak of a Brahmin? Who here can light a fire by chanting any mantra? Sometimes we can't even do it with matches. What to speak of lighting up with mantras. And as far as vaishyas, what are we protecting? We're not protecting cows here. We're certainly not growing anything. Well, are we growing anything here? We're growing old. And as far as service, that is a struggle for all of us. To do things like to come to the platform of becoming a genuine Shudra and actually do things submissively, that's quite a challenge. It takes around 70 years to practicing Krishna consciousness to come up to the Shudra category. Hopefully quicker than that. In any case, what's our prescribed duty? Materially, prescribed duty is the duties enjoined according to one's psychophysical condition under the spell of the modes of material nature. So most of us are quite mixed in our modes of material nature. One moment we're in goodness, next moment we're the devil. Next moment, we're like a baby, we're fast asleep. So we don't know what mode of material nature we're going to be in from one moment to the next. It's always changing. So therefore, it would be very hard to consider what our prescribed beauty should be, although we have a propensity. Some people like to talk about Krishna. Some people like to organize. Some people like to get resources. And some devotees like to assist. So there's some quality there. But spiritual duties are as ordered by the spiritual master for the transcendental service of Krishna. So we know we're supposed to chant Hare Krishna. If we don't know what to do, at least we should be chanting Hare Krishna. And other things, reading Prabhupada's books, worshipping the deity, serving the devotees, trying to create a spiritual atmosphere. But whether material or spiritual, one should stick to his prescribed duties, even up to death, rather than imitate another's prescribed duties. Duties on the spiritual platform and duties on the material platform may be different, but the principle of following the authorized direction is always good for the performer. When one is under the spell of the modes of material nature, one should follow the prescribed duties for his particular situation, should not imitate others. For example, a Brahmin who is in the mode of goodness is nonviolent, whereas a Kshatriya who is in the mode of passion is allowed to be violent. As such, for a Kshatriya, it is better to be vanquished following the rules of violence than to imitate a Brahmin who follows the principles of nonviolence. Everyone has to cleanse his heart by a gradual process, not abruptly. However, when one transcends the modes of material nature and is fully situated in Krishna consciousness, he can perform anything and everything under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master. So, that's called our propensity, that everyone has natural propensity. But we should do that in the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. For instance, someone might like to paint, so Prabhupada wanted them to paint pictures of Krishna. Someone like maybe a sculpture, so Prabhupada had them make deities. Someone else might be like to write articles, so he had them write articles in Back to Godhead or in other magazines about Krishna. Someone may like to make money, so Prabhupada agreed that spiritual sky was all right to make money and then utilize it in Krishna's mission. So somehow or another, it's not that we do anything we want to, but we do something according to our propensity in trying to further the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. Then that becomes our prescribed duty if it's authorized by the appropriate authorities. Then that's what we're supposed to be doing. And it's an opportunity to do it in Krishna consciousness for Krishna. Otherwise, if we do some duty and it's not in Krishna consciousness, then who is it for? It must be for something else other than Krishna. If we're not thinking about Krishna when we're doing it, we must be thinking about someone else or something else. Therefore, when we do our duty, we should think, I'm doing this for Krishna. Then it's more likely we'll remember Krishna. If we just go from one thing to the next mechanically, then where is the chance of remembering Krishna, that we're doing it for Krishna? And if we're not doing it for Krishna, then we're just, where is our consciousness? And even if we think we're doing it for Krishna, and even if we're not meditating upon Krishna during the whole duty, but at least it's being dedicated to Krishna. At least this service is being dedicated to Krishna. It's more likely we'll do it in some kind of Krishna consciousness. But if we're doing it under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master, however, when one transcends the modes of material nature and is fully situated in Krishna consciousness, he can perform anything and everything under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master. In that complete stage of Krishna consciousness, the Kshatriya may act as a Brahmana, or a Brahmana may act as a Kshatriya. In the transcendental stage, the distinctions of the material world do not apply. For example, Vishvamrita was originally a Kshatriya, but later on he acted as a Brahmana. Whereas Parashurama was a Brahmana, but later on acted as a Kshatriya. Being transcendentally situated, they could do so. But as long as one is on the material platform, he must perform his duties according to the modes of material nature. At the same time, he must have a full sense of Krishna consciousness. So if you have a cotton picker, they have these machines picking cotton, and you use it to pick tomatoes, you'll get a mess. You'll get tomato sauce instead of tomatoes. And if you have a corn picker and you use it to mow the grass, then your grass is going to look very different than it should be. So similarly, we're born into a certain body with a certain propensity, a certain talents, and if we utilize it according to what the body actually is in Krishna's service, then we'll get some results. But if we try to act differently, as people nowadays, whatever body they have, they're unsatisfied. They want to do something different. Of course, they don't want to do anything for Krishna. That's why they're dissatisfied. And therefore, it doesn't matter what they do next. Sometimes men change into women and they want to change back to men again. And they still don't know what they're supposed to be doing, because they're not Krishna conscious. Therefore, due to so-called scientific advancement, I mean, previously we have examples of, for instance, there was one king, I forget his name, Sudyanti, I think, and that he and his men, riding on very nice horses, rode into the Kailas, into the forest of Kailas, and suddenly they all changed into women, including the horses, changed into mares, to female horses. They weren't very happy about that. So then their spiritual master prayed to Lord Shiva, and every 2 months they'd come back, they'd be male, and I think every month they'd be male, and every month they'd be female. Because the citizens were not very happy. At that time, at least, to have a lady as the king. Most ladies didn't want to ride into battle. So, interesting enough, that particular king, he had a number of children. I guess he got pregnant sometimes when he was a woman. And then, I don't know how it worked out, really. It's somehow or another worked out. So he was, obviously, this was rather unusual. Of course, he would be a hero nowadays. He'd be in the front cover of Time magazine. This is the ideal. Unfortunately, we don't know where Kailas, and we can send some people there. But even if we sent them there, if you don't like being a male, we know where to go. We ride them all into Kailas. I don't think Vishistha Muni is going to turn them back into males every other month. In any case, this has always been a problem in the material world since time immemorial. Practically everyone is dissatisfied. If they're not trained properly from birth, they're automatically dissatisfied, because without Krishna consciousness, no one could be happy in the material world. And therefore, the materialists will always think that if I change my position, that will make me happy. Well, no, it never does. Becoming happy dependent upon material opulence, then the richest people should be very happy. But they're never happy. And the poorest people should be the most unhappy. But that's not true at all. According to the survey they did, who are the happiest people in the world, who feel themselves the most happy? Does anyone know what country in the world was that? Bangladesh, where every monsoon their houses get washed away. The only thing they take with them is a spoon and a cup. But they have nothing to worry about. Because they don't have anything to worry about. So they're happy because they have nothing to worry about. Everyone else is worried about everything. Now, they need a new house every month after the monsoon, but they have their cup and their spoon. Now, if we lost our cup and spoon, we'd have to go and see a psychiatrist to try and pacify our minds. Oh, my cup, it was such a nice cup. So that's the difference. Is we think we need so many things to be happy, then we'll always be unhappy. And if we think we need only Krishna to be happy, then we'll always be happy. So that's the lesson here. We should try to find out what we're supposed to do and do it in Krishna consciousness is the most important thing. And not worry so much exactly what my service is, but at least do our service. Do that as nicely as we can for Krishna. And then naturally we'll remember Krishna because we're offering something to Krishna. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? One interesting thing is that, like in our movement, we, Prabhupada, sometimes they thought, well, Prabhupada's a pure devotee. He's the Uttama Adhikari. We should find out what we're supposed to do from him. And then they'd ask Prabhupada, what should I do? So they Prabhupada said, ask the temple president. Well, wait a second. You're the pure devotee, this temple president. He doesn't even know who he is. How is he going to know who I am? But if the authority, Prabhupada, tells you that this is what you're supposed to do, then if you do it, including following some other authority, then you're still under the protection of the authority that told you to follow the other authority. Of course, we shouldn't lose our intelligence. We're supposed, not that the Prabhupada says in his books, follow the authority. My authority says we should go and rob a bank because we need some money. Well, Prabhupada said in this book, we should follow the authority. And when the police arrest me, I say, well, I'm just following the authority, that's all. It's legal, according to Prabhupada. You're the thieves. It's Krishna's money. We're just reclaiming it. You're the ones who are stealing. Well, it might be true, and you could explain it to all the other prisoners when they put you. That you're the only honest person in the jail. But that won't work out very good. We do have to use our intelligence too. So the conclusion is we should understand that there is a line of authority, but we have to use our intelligence to figure out how to serve it too. Any questions, comments?
Yes, it's a question on internet from Bhakti Yoga Tilburg. Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for enlightening lecture. Question, I understood we can have some propensity but not refer to ourselves as Brahmana, Kshatriya, etc. because we cannot have the qualities of these designations. Is that correct understanding?
Well, we could have the qualities of the designations, but generally speaking, we don't. We don't have to be. Of course, we have in our society, we give Brahminical initiation, or second initiation, actually, which is including the Vaishyas, the Kshatriyas, and the Brahmanas. But we don't really need, at this particular point, to be designated. I mean, if you go up to someone in the street and say, please take this book, they say, well, why? Because I'm a Brahmin. A what? I'm a Brahmana. You're what? What is that? I'm in the mode of goodness. You're in what? People will not understand. They won't appreciate it. It won't be very valuable for our preaching. But internally, we understand what the qualities of Brahman are. And therefore, we expect, for instance, to wash our hands or to perform a certain type of purification before we worship the deities. So we don't shy away completely from designations. At least right now, people don't mind being called a Brahman. But if you went up to someone and says, excuse me, you're a Shudra. What did you call me? I said, you're a Shudra. You're a what? I'm a what? Why don't we step outside and we can settle this? So people would not, you know, we're a little bit too much in the bodily concept of life to give people too many designations right now. We have enough of them. We don't need any more of them. Because if you tell someone you're becoming a Brahmin, yeah, I'm a Brahmin, that's right. You touch my foot, I'm a Brahmin. So we don't mind getting some designations, but the other ones we may have to save for later. Anything else? Hola, Granthara, Shrimad Bhagavatam.